Phela mina ngiyinsizwa ngiyinsizwa.
What's happening? It's another episode of the Shady Podcast. My name is what's my name today? Shady. Yeah, my name is Shady of the podcast. And that guy over there.
It's fucking volume.
Bafo.
Did you see that tweet? They said, I want to be a Zulu guy so I can just eat meat and say bafo the whole day.
Marungum Zulu.
Bafo.
Right, bafo?
Right, bafo. What's the story? I saw you in Cape Town, dog. Cape Towning it out?
Listen, I'm with Tisanga in Cape Town.
Eh? Okay.
This is the third or fourth week.
Yeah, I went there, guys. Yeah, please don't. The flights are expensive. We're not trying to fly down for christenings and
whatnot.
So, yeah, no. I'm that parent. Call me if you made somebody pregnant. Sort yourself out.
A lot's been happening, but yeah, I'm trying to find out what the hell is happening in this country, dog. Mm.
In fact, what's been happening is beyond us.
Yes.
Yeah, well, sometimes I think as citizens, we take an interest in the goings-on and the state of the nation. But there comes problems that are just beyond us. Kumele ubize ama-experts.
Ama-experts.
Yeah. Umuntu nje ngavela endabe no ENCA, ekhipha amagama, you start incriminating yourself. Mabekshange kameru pizulando X ongasolvegi. That's when I said, yo, this politics shit is beyond me.
It's beyond us.
You need to call someone.
In the building, please make some noise, show some love. We have Miss Khanya Bonani, who is, like Warren said, an expert in all things, but by profession, social scientist. Correct? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Correct.
And hi, but yeah, you're a social
commentator.
Yes. Yes, what you'd like to go by. Yes. Yin is social commentator.
Hey, it's Kandindab. But Kandindab.
This is liking you. I'm getting
Faga. Yeah, we like to involve ourselves. Now that we fixed the mic, you were saying Ugutu Tandindaba.
And get paid for it.
I am a Tandindaber. Yes.
So all we do as social scientists is really understand how various live happenings take place and how does it impact different social groupings, right? Okay. For all the sociology kids out there, yes, you can do it. You can actually look at how a news event takes place. And how does it affect different parts of society?
Sure.
Whether it's class, whether it's geography, whether it's gender, whether it's even...
Agenda.
Yeah, there's agenda, but leave it to the media people. Let them figure out how this thing works.
Mm.
But for the rest of us, what do we respond to? How does this change our perception? So, for example, let's take the police and where we are now.
Yeah.
A lot of people's perceptions changed after that one briefing.
Yes.
And obviously the contention beyond the optics, him being in an army regalia or what we see as camouflage.
Yeah.
Him being in a uniform that is not tasked or assigned to his office. Those sorts of things, right, help us understand how we socially respond to each other, how subsequent events take place after that. So whether it be the police commission, which we'll talk about later, or it's even the hands-off Mkhwanazi matches that have been happening weekly.
So the changes that take place, so what effect does it have in the diaspora?
Yes.
Okay.
So as much as we can talk about how social media, for example, has responded in its own way about this debate, all of
Chris
these
Chris Excel
different...
raised money for cows. I put money there, dog. I bought like a hoof or something. 500,
you're not smart.
500, yeah, in
call. Uti ungangilibali in your thank yous and acknowledgements. So I think more than anything, when you commentate about the social events that happen in this country, it's also linked to politics. It's also linked to the economy because we are not just these vessels that move and belong to our country. We are responding to the things that are happening to us in South Africa, outside of South Africa, at any given point.
Mm.
So I think that's what social commentators are supposed to not just understand, but also be able to see not just the atomic event that's taking place, but how do we respond to it? How does it relate to our communities and how we perceive all of these stakeholders that are taking part in this event?
Okay.
And what what do we take seriously or take credence from those moments?
Right. Is that commentating based on the opinion of the social commentator? Or is it based on we are the people as, well, not we as in me included, mm-hmm. but you guys are the people who go and do the necessary research. Then we come and we report the facts to you. As it affects society. Or is it like, yo guys, in my opinion, I think what's going on is... Yeah.
4:10.
Yeah. Because you know? I'm just like, is it a fact-based thing? Mm-hmm. You know, where you come and you say, hey man, this took place. Yep. What it's caused is 1, 2, 3 in the economy, 4, 5, 6 in politics, and 6, 7, 8 on social media. Versus mm-hmm. it's like, well, as a result of this, we now see, in my opinion... this shift taking place, cabinet research shuffles, these events, yes. All right. Yes.
I think more than anything, I mean, obviously, I'd like to hope that I return to academia one day to continue sort of this work. But one of the things we need to remember is that when you create research and create an informed opinion about what is happening in society around you, you also need to remember that in many instances, you have to not just rely on desktop research. You have to talk to people. Mm. Sure. And you have to talk to people from different parts of society to
understand. You can't just sit and Google it.
Right?
Yeah, that's the content producer in you also speaking. It's like, don't just find stories.
Trying to hide her. Sure. But I think more than anything, what informs what society does next, right? You see them in the op-eds from different organizations, whether they be in civil society, whether they be in academia, whether they be from interest groups. Social commentary doesn't just start and end in academia or in public university. Mm. It moves through all of us in the spaces we work and how we leverage the resources we have to also contribute to national discourse and be able to say, look, I have a difference in opinion on how we are solving this problem. Or alternatively, if we don't have a plan and we are sticking to resilience as our only option.
Resilient, you mean. Yeah, we're sticking to resilient.
We work with what we have, and we work with the resources that could be made available to start planning for the future. I mean, I think a lot of people don't take seriously the work that a National Planning Commission does in trying to plan the grander scheme.
You mentioned commission in this country and switch off because it's just been commissioned.
The effect that it's had on society.
See, that's the effect.
Yeah, so this is sort of the thing that I wish more and more people could also talk about. The fact that we have now rebranded the word commission to mean this terrible thing.
Mm.
And that nothing comes from this terrible thing because all we see is 600 million gone.
Mm. I think I wouldn't say we've rebranded commission. I think what's happened is the word commission has been abused. Where we label a thing a commission when it's actually a money grab. And I think as citizens, you look at it and say, cool, I see the benefits. Like, I'm kind of understand the benefits of a commission, what it's supposed to do, right? Mm. But does it do that thing at a cost of 1 billion? Mm. That's my thing. It's like, hey, you know what? If I could go back to the beginning of this commission that was looking into the theft of 5 billion, I'd prefer if the commission to find out how the 5 billion was stolen shouldn't cost us 1 billion. I'm using random numbers. I'm not referring to any specific commission. But case in point, then you'll hear, hey, commission has been abused too much. Let's call it a dialogue.
Mm.
You understand? Then again, some of those terms, that's why I asked that question actually to say, is it like sort of fact or opinion? You wouldn't be able to explain yourself without the use of the word commission, which as soon as you say it, do you find that, wouldn't you agree that people so much tune out because they're like,
of course. Of course I'd agree with that commissions, everybody tunes out. And I absolutely understand the why. But I think one of the things that we have to also, and I don't know if it's the media's role, I don't know if it's the podcast's role, I don't know if it's the way in which we are also as a society not paying attention to the work of other smaller institutions in different parts of society who are quietly doing the work, who are quietly saying, guys, we've taken these people to court because this money is missing and it hasn't been paid back. And we have this entire report of 600 pages saying that they need to pay the money back, but no one's tracking it.
Sure.
Like those sorts of people, we need to bring them forward and bring them quickly so that we can actually be able to balance off the use of the word commission with the action of bringing the money back or firing this person and blacklisting them.
Yeah.
So I think if we're going to talk results based, yes, commissions aren't doing what they are said to be doing.
Nakoge.
But what I will say. But what I will say. Yeah. What I will say is that it's how intentional are we to do the work of finding these institutions that are quietly, not in the wings, but are quietly doing the work of bringing back the money.
Got you.
Like SARS.
I wanted to track back on, I think we're speaking on social commentary. I sometimes see people who, like on news platforms, you know, on various different news stations, and it feels like their commentary is steered towards a certain narrative. So when you were raising the word agenda, I was like, oh, yes.
Mm.
Is that not the case where some guys are captured in their commentary and it's steered towards...
Hey,
even the word capture has been reassigned. Yeah.
It's now an adjective. It's been rebranded. Everything's rebranded right now.
Sure.
So I think...
How difficult is it to have an objective view which still, you know, holds weight? Because you'll hear of a commentator who says this, it's like, they're captured by this political
party. Agenda must agenda.
The agenda is to push private sector or I don't know. I
understand what you're saying. I think it's difficult, especially in the news environment, because one, you're dealing with people who have written books about people who didn't ask for books to be written about, and then it becomes a holy fire.
Sure.
Sorry, Prince Mashele.
Bombs dropped. My dude, bro. That's my guy. That's
sorry. What sorry. Is that?
Mm.
So I think there are definitely people who obviously want to push an agenda, mostly because they don't want to see the country in its current state be comfortable.
Okay.
But I think what listeners and viewers need to remember is that their position isn't the only position out there.
Mm.
And I know a lot of people use the word political commentator, social commentator loosely. But I think you also need to remember who's writing about these things, who's researching about these things, who's putting out work, who's working in spaces that are constantly wrestling with the national question, wrestling with what is our future? What does it look like? Where is it going?
Sure.
Who is part of this future? And in order for us to survive, right, what are these institutions giving us the most balanced response? Because in every discussion, because I do a lot of long format work, I also have to be very mindful of what do these stakeholders bring to the table? So that it's not just contrarians sitting here telling you what they believe is their move forward, right? And I'll speak more on that when we talk about the issue of the US tariffs and how we got here and now us breeding consequences of things that, honestly, we could have dodged this bullet.
We could have, yeah. Mm. And also everybody having something to say about it.
Exactly.
I think let's get into it.
We're going to challenge you today.
Yeah.
Because you are the expert.
Allegedly.
So if you'd like to have your disclaimer, please look at that camera and tell the people now that today...
I can't be held liable for any of the comments said on the show.
Okay, we'll start internationally.
Sure.
Let's go.
Okay, so roll that video for us there, Getsy.
What did you say to the president? What did you say? Had a great meeting. He's a great man. I told him his work rate is outstanding, and I wish him all the best.
Tell me the Taoiseach says you don't speak for the people of Ireland. You're responsible.
I am an employer of over 200 people, almost 300 people in the country of Ireland. He's an employer of none. Every available metric available to us has shown that the government of Ireland currently has failed the people of Ireland. In 10 years, Dublin City Centre has gone from one of the most safest cities in Europe to one of the most dangerous. So shame on him for saying that, speaking down on an Irishman.
Right.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Right. Speaking of rebranding themselves, Conor McGregor, UFC double champ, the last number of UFC businessman, entrepreneur, drives his Lamborghini yacht around.
Parties in Ibiza.
Right.
The ush.
Yes.
Snort coke on a yacht.
Allegedly. Has rebranded himself as Conor the Politician.
Mm.
Now, how... I feel like when things like this happen, it's hard to take politics and politicians seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very dangerous because these are the custodians of leading their respective nations.
Mm.
To bring it back home, It's where we are sold a dream of a man who has now rebranded from being a entrepreneur and a businessman. And, you know, they sell you this package that this is the best guy to back.
I thought you were going to bring it back home and say when people start DJing because of failed careers elsewhere. Sorry, that's what I thought you were going to say.
Tell story. Tell the story.
Well, it's like, oh, you know what? My career didn't work. DJ.
I'm a DJ now. I told you to put a disclaimer. Right? Yeah, like, so here we have a situation where the way that the dream is sold is that people sort of live this life where celebrity is very powerful. Another good example is Donald Trump. Donald Trump was a celebrity, probably the biggest celebrity for the longest time, in my opinion. You know, this guy was on for 40 years.
Yeah.
He was a celebrity for being an entrepreneur. You know, I think he was like almost the OG of doing that, where it's like, I'm actually a businessman, but I'm going to do interviews on every newspaper and on every TV station to brand myself as, and now I'm running for president. And he won. Connor here comes along. He's probably trying the same thing despite his sordid past. And bringing it back home, like I said, is we kind of have always been sold politicians who are the dream of, I killed it in this, I killed it in that, I'm a boss at those things, so I can handle this running a country thing. How dangerous would you say that is?
Oh, it's 100% dangerous. We're all going to die, guys. We're all going to die.
But not now.
Hi, bunch.
Yeah.
So this is why I say this. I think more than anything, one of the things we need to remember is that when we have these celebrities, entrepreneurs, and everyone else in between come in and try and run for office, right? We don't see them at the simplest unit. We don't see them at a branch saying, I would like to be a member of the African National Congress.
Sure.
And they go straight to
here
the top.
Are my ambitions. Or in the South African context, I think my ideas are great. We can run a country. Let's start a political party. Floyd Shivambu. Any number of the new parties that were started popping in the last 2.5 years in the run-up to 2024.
In the last 10 years, really?
10 years, sure.
Yeah, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we also need to remember is that some of these parties actually survived. The EFF worked.
EFF worked. Well, what did we have? We
had cope.
We had EFF. We had Good Party. These are all
still alive.
Good, they are still alive.
With what, one seat in,
is still alive.
In Parliament?
Yes, but I mean, listen, I think one of the things you also need to remember in terms of South Africa's political party
climate,
living rate, dying rate, life expectancy, is that we are also having to deal with ever-changing issues, right?
Sure.
So, for example, 2016 was the big break in terms of people thinking about the future of South Africa as some level of coalition, but they always thought about it over there. By 2030,
2035, 2040. You mean like GNU vibes?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think the way in which political parties have survived over the years is changing. The EFF has cracked the code in terms of longevity and sustainability, even with this breakup that's just taken place with Floyd and Julius. We've seen how the Good Party wasn't necessarily something that was just created overnight. It was because Helen Zille and Patricia de Lille fell out.
Sure.
And their survival, even though they have one seat, is actually quite great considering how other parties don't even feature in Parliament. Or have lost seats and are no longer in Parliament because of Good.
Got you.
Because of Rise Mzansi.
PA.
PA, all of that.
Despite how much money they threw at it.
By the same person.
You guys should do an episode on political party funding, because that's where you will see where the money resides.
Sure. Well, we are. That's why you're here. Who gets the money?
Who gets all
and
of the money?
And where does the money come
from? It's coming from
you
one
remember
person.
The Rise Mzansi thing? I never understood it at the time, but I was like, I like Konoksha Amanz.
No, man, it was the, wasn't it the one Oppenheimer lady who...
Yes, but they got like
three parties, like 15 bar, 15 bar, 15 bar.
Yeah, that's a lot of money to throw at. It's almost like...
But then there's the Capitec CEO who put all of his money where? At the DA. And no one's questioning that.
No, but the DA is already in. They actually have seats.
But
my thing is, if I had to start a party tomorrow and someone says, let me throw 50 million at you, I mean, that's what in the Diddy party is going on. You know, that's too good to be true.
No, but the point still stands in that we don't question how the national blesser gives his money, Patrice Motsepe,
sure.
And it's sitting at the ANC.
Yeah, but the ANC is in charge. My thing is,
it's not just about
you want to back the not want to back, but like it makes more sense to back the winning horse. When you're backing a horse, esngayaz, a horse we've never heard of, with not 500,000 rand, millions, tens of millions.
Mm.
It, like you said, it would be good to do a deep dive into where does the money come from and where does the money go.
Mm.
It's a lot of money to throw at something that's got no chance of getting a seat.
But we go back to the EFF blueprint in terms of sustainability and longevity. The issue about building political parties is not an issue of whether or not it'll survive one election. You have to see whether it'll survive five and different types of elections and different audience factors. So a lot of people are putting money into political parties, not just because they believe in its goals or its achievements, but also how do you now build the smallest unit to grow?
Okay.
Where are you going to get the next set of votes? What's the next push, right? And for the economic freedom fighters, wanting economic freedom in this lifetime or in the next lifetime, and having issues like land, like restructuring the economy, those sort of topics are going to bring attention, regardless of whether it's a local government election, doesn't matter whether it's a national election.
Mm.
So if people are smart about what are their main pillars, they will always find a way to bring in more money and to create noise around the work that they're doing. So it's not so much about whether you're in the National Assembly or not, but also how do you use all of these new platforms you have accessed, whether they be at national level or provincial level or even at council level, to further your work and to build trust.
Mm.
If you've you can build trust, sort of you can find money anywhere.
Right. So my question then to you is, I've actually just figured something out. Julius Malema is the Conor McGregor of SA.
No.
Wait, let me tell you.
I wouldn't say that.
I said, I figured it out. I'll tell you why. That guy was already, he was famous when he left the ANC to join the EFF. He was one of the most spoken about politicians. He was always in the news for good or bad reasons, right? He's also found a way to brand himself, you know, the CIC. Every time he opens his mouth, whether it's for a press conference or in parliament, the way he chooses his words, that's how Conor McGregor came up.
Yeah, but he wasn't a celebrity, dog.
But he was famous, dog.
As a politician.
Yes, but we knew him. He was coming to parties. He was out and about. He was inside the youth.
You're on the inverse.
I'm not. I'm telling you.
No, it's a politician that...
Right? He's a politician who became famous for being a politician. It's still a celebrity. Okay?
No, but
I think it helped. Whereas Versus, for example, I don't even know who led Rise and Zanzi. I don't know who that bra is. I only know you got 20 bars. Do you get what I'm saying? It's like, who were you before you came here?
But Tsongiso Sibi has like been known for being the national editor for the Business Day for quite a long time.
But that's not in the mainstream diaspora, friend.
Funda, read, chief.
No.
Do your research on your political parties.
What I'm saying is celebrity. Most celebrities are actually famous for being famous, is my point.
Mm.
Granted, because you're in the industry. For the ordinary South African, just as I'm saying with Conor McGregor, for the ordinary person in Ireland, they know him for fighting. They know him from UFC.
Mm.
They know him for being famous. Mm. With Malema, he was such an outspoken, well-known figure. The politics part of it actually didn't feature as much as the celebrity part of it. This guy, up to now, when he sings Kill the Poor, Shoot the Poor, Shoot the Farmer, it trends globally.
Mm.
He knows that it's going to get him trending globally. Mm. I don't then question, who is this guy really? I look at it and I say, this guy is getting clicks, he's getting views, he's getting numbers. His name is spreading. That's how you can't understate how much value that brings to the EFF survival. These other people, yes, you were somebody who achieved in day ning, sharp. I'm not taking that away from you.
Mm.
But to talk to the majority of South Africans, you need that celebrity fire. Yes or no?
Okay. Can I just say something before you come in? Sorry, PH. So, I'm not undervaluing his social media presence.
What is it called? The word I'm looking for. I'm using the wrong word now.
His charisma, his social equity. His social equity, right, in society. But what I'm saying is that he hasn't only relied on that. Because remember, the EFS wasn't just built by Julius. It was built by Julius. It was built by Mbuyiseni, and it was built by Floyd. By Floyd.
Mm.
And their premise was around the issue of economic freedom. But also their premise was also intellectual. That's why you see in the growth and the development of the EFF, they encouraged many young people to go to school and to finish school.
Mbuyiseni actually completed his doctorate at some point.
He finished his PhD whilst being with the EFF as well. So I think, yes, there's this equity that comes from, I don't know if you want to call it a bad boy era, the issue around his expulsion from the ANC, along with some of the other youth league members of that time, but he didn't stick to it. It wasn't his calling. When people think about Julius Malema as an entity, right, not just as a CIC of a political party, but as an entity, I think he has proven his social worth beyond a Conor McGregor type, because now you see him as an educated person. You see him as someone who is not just capable of leading a party, but someone who has had to deal with adversity and had to overcome certain changes within his party and be able to still carry the flame. Whether or not that's necessarily shown up in the results, especially over the last year, not necessarily. But building a different type of entity takes time. Mm. And that entity around political education, because I know they have a very vibrant and strong political education program within their ranks, is also equally important, so that you can shed the skin of, oh, he's merely a fighter. Oh, merely kill the Boer. Oh, merely, you know, this bad boy of ANC youth league.
You've got to have that credibility to back up.
Yes, and you have to evolve as a person in front of these people, because also you are a public entity, which is why for me, if someone were to say Conor McGregor for the People's Republic of Ireland, I'd be like, no, are you insane?
Mm.
We've seen this movie before. And unfortunately, because we're living in a time where in the last year, quite a number of European countries have voted for right-wing parties. I'm not going to say that the Irish people are going to take him seriously, but there's a danger in bringing such a person into the political fray, because it's not so much about your celebrity, but rather whether you can build something that's going to help a country change its course.
Without being too extreme.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm. This is why the Trump story becomes a problem, because we now know that document of his that he created, Agenda 2030, his entire premise has now come true in America, and a lot of Americans are not happy with the premise.
Speaking of Trump,
yes.
I'm glad we are here.
Speaking of Trump, his favorite person.
Oh dear.
Woo, woo. Talk us through the tariffs that have been placed on, you know, South Africa. The effect that, you know, those will have, and I don't think South Africans are fully aware of those effects. Do you want to just talk us through that?
So where we are right now is that South Africa, amongst many other countries in the world, are suffering from these new tariffs that have been created by the president. It was part of his press statements that he had put out. He'd also signed an executive order back in January around cutting foreign aid.
Was it in Jan?
So there were two big dates. There was the Jan date, which was 7 days into office, and then there was the March-April date.
100 days or something.
At the 100-day mark. Mm. So basically everyone was like, this is economic Armageddon.
Sure.
Strap in.
Now you're right. It's 6 months.
We have survived 6 months of Trump. I don't know how much more we can survive. With regards to Trump and where we are right now, we are facing a 30% tariff hike coming up this Thursday. So the Durco minister, Ronald Lamola, and Park Stau, who is the trade, industry, and cooperation minister, both had a press briefing together to discuss what South Africa's way forward is. They've been negotiating furiously since the U.S. visit to the Oval Office,
sure,
where we thought things were okay. We were
meeting was part of the negotiation.
Yes.
The golfers one.
The golfers, mm-hmm, everybody. There were many other people in the room, let's not forget.
That just didn't speak, yes.
That did not speak, but at some point, I really wish they could have just stopped the golfers.
Mm. I'm so pissed.
We've been through a lot as a country in 6 months.
Like, yo, bro, give me your seat, bro.
Yo, like, shut up, dog. Yeah.
So our situation right now, despite the fact that many American companies still wish to work in South Africa, sure, and many others showed interest after that meeting, because the president went to a business forum after that meeting with Trump, where many people did still express their interest. We're now sitting in a situation where a lot of our local exporters, especially in the automobile, in agricultural sectors like citrus, the wine industry in the Western Cape, and a few others are going to be adversely affected. The steel industry as well. Steel's quite interesting right now because we're dealing with ArcelorMittal South Africa closing down, which creates a very big problem, not just in terms of job losses, but also in terms of how do we navigate how local economies and localization of these big companies are going to help us, not just with the production of steel, but also finding new ways to sell, you know, not just ore, but products abroad.
Finished product.
Yes. So basically the two ministers were speaking about the helpline that they've discovered. There's an export support line that's been created for businesses, just to sort of not just deal with the complaints, but also deal with, okay, do you need help finding an alternative economy that will be able to not just take up interest, but also sign on the dotted line and you start trading with them.
Okay.
Because we don't know how long these tariffs are going to last. Mm-hmm. Is this until 2029 where Trump leaves office? Or will this continue beyond 2029? Because we don't know what the Americans are going to do in as far as their next election is concerned.
So are you saying like if another Republican comes in and carries on?
We are not sure where that conversation is going to end, one. But two, because we also don't have an ambassador to the Republic, and let me see, Jonas is stuck in London because they won't let him in to the US.
What's his deal? They mised him entry.
So
every
country, whenever they receive a diplomatic person or members of a mission, they have to approve credentials. It's a tradition that spans time immemorial. Usually it's never a problem unless that person has done something or said something that may have upset its host. And usually it's never really a problem because we are also trying to be in the business of ensuring that that person is comfortable enough to be able to start doing their work.
Sure.
We're not impeding their work.
Sure.
For the US, obviously, they probably found a clip of Lebisi Jonas talking badly about Trump. They felt uncomfortable.
Like at any point, Jay.
At any point. But I think there's a clip from the SABC from 2020, if I'm not mistaken. I think he spoke at a lecture of some sort. That clip went viral again. I think it was sometime in May or June because it was close to the time where the president had to go to the Oval Office and people were asking, Mr. President, where's Lebisi Jonas? And the presidency was like, no, we're not telling you anything. He's fine. He's fine. And everyone was told to back off. So I think more than anything, when there's a problem like that, usually countries are given another opportunity to field another diplomat.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why the president of the republic hasn't done so, but I also don't know why Ronald Lamula's department has not been asked this question. Perhaps I missed it in yesterday's press briefing.
Sure.
But it's important that we have somebody on the ground to tell us what are the murmurs, where are we going? Because when you leave an embassy, whether it be the US here in Sandton, because they are fighting Leila Khalif Drive, or they are fighting the rest of Pretoria, you are now leaving a vacuum. Now, basically, that means that all of the people, the attachés that work in that institution, the researchers, they have to do their jobs, but they are speaking directly now to Mother Body, which is, in this case, Washington. But who has the final say? Who signs off? Who shows up for the events? The G20 is around the corner, and the president of America has just said that he is no longer interested.
He's not interested.
Yeah. Coming, yeah.
He didn't even say, "Oh, I won't be attending." Or he was like, "I don't have time for that."
But also, there's no name of a G20 Sherpa from the US that is going to be approved to go.
Mm.
And there are still very important Sherpa meetings along the G20 politics track and the finance track.
What's Sherpa now?
Sherpa is almost like, let me put it this way. The president, the head of state, will be with the head of state's meeting. The Sherpa is the person who deals with the important conversations that take place around resolutions that are set up.
Is Ronald Lamula not the Sherpa in this case?
No.
Okay.
So the DG of the Department of International Relations, Zane Dangle, he is the Sherpa.
Mm.
So he's the person who is not just speaking to everyone about the resolutions that are coming out from the different groups, but he's also the person who's setting up meetings to make sure that the heads of state do come together at the important milestones of the G20 presidency. Mm. He's also the person who has to now go forward and say, these are the things we've achieved. He's almost like the person who has to do the transition, the handover report. He's the person who has to make sure that the ship continues to move with the main players.
Where the heads just have the conversation.
Yes.
The prep document is prepared by the Sherpa. He comes and he says.
But he also has to engage with all the other Sherpas from the 20 countries to be like, guys, where are we with this? Where are we going? Okay. How do we ensure things happen? How do we push this door forward?
Yeah.
So I think more than anything, because we don't have ambassadors on either side, we're never going to get to a point where we are both going to find one, a resolution that works for both of us. But two, how do we now manage this gap and this disagreement and discontent when there's so much misinformation being spread?
Mm.
Ambassadors are basically a stop nonsense to
a filter for
to what's happening in Washington and what's coming out of South Africa. Because
they've got the official story as well.
Because they also have to brief. They have to brief the State Department to say, hey, listen, this is not true. This is working. This is not true. Who are you sending for this specific working visit? What is the purpose of their visit? Do I have to be there with them? Like, there's a lot of diplomatic
procedures
and working arounds and movement in the background whilst you guys see on TV
whilst
all
the
headlines, all these pretty people taking pictures saying we all met and we're trying to build a world that's more just, that's more fair, with less debts and more economic development.
They've become like online scammers. They just post the photos and they say, good meeting. Everything's great. My question earlier was going to be, is South Africa being too sensitive about the tariff issue because it's a South Africa problem?
Sensitive or soft?
No, sensitive in that, not I'll sensitive.
Answer both.
Sort of like the hype that's being made of it, right? Where it's like 30% tariff on South Africa coming, it's looming. We as South Africans receive it differently to the rest of the world, obviously, because it affects us directly.
Mm-hmm.
But Trump has tariffed everyone. Remember, he came out, he first hit Canada with this one, then he was like, China, FUSAC, 140%. Then he was like, I'm tariffing the UK if they don't do X, Y, and Z. I'm tariffing Europe if they don't. So but I feel like it's almost like a blanket plan for the whole world. I don't think he's specifically targeting South Africa.
Even islands that don't have people or economies were involved in this massacre.
New to betting? EasyBet.co.za makes it simple, fun, and exciting, even if it's your first time. Sign up now and score a 50 Rand sign-up bonus. No deposit needed. Just use the promo code SHADY, P-H, that's SHADY, P-H, and it's yours instantly. If you're looking for more, your first deposit gets a 150% bonus up to 1,500 Rand. That's more to play with and bigger chances to win. But wait, there's more. EasyBet will match your first bet up to 500 Rand, so you're getting extra play without extra spend. Even if luck's not on your side, they give you back 15% of your losing bets every week. Now that's backing real players. And the best part, there's even more waiting when you join. So head over to easybet.co.za and check it out for yourself. T's and C's apply. EasyBet Group Pty Limited is licensed and regulated by the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board. No persons under the age of 18 may gamble, and winners know when to stop.
But they, though all those countries you've mentioned went, oh, okay, we have tariff or not sag tariff. And that's why I was asking if we're soft about it, where we haven't said, well, screw you, we're closing our borders to, you know, the ships or whatever it is. It's just like, hey, okay, cool, we'll take it because there's no... it's like, how? President, fight for us or say something, do something. Letting this person slap you on the one side, whereas China, Canada, all of the tech now,
But I don't think we're now it almost until they got to the negotiation.
Yeah, but you need.
I feel like we're not tech nowing, but we are led to believe that we are having these talks. But as you rightfully pointed out, now we don't have the key people in certain positions to make these
on
talks.
On either side,
yes, where it's like we're having the talks, but we don't have an ambassador sitting in London. Okay, so all of the information that we're receiving, how do we verify the credibility of this information or filter it if we don't have someone to filter it through?
You had a whole
vice versa,
team.
They don't have somebody here, like you said, where those conversations can happen. So we're being led to believe that negotiations are taking place. The deadline is fast approaching, and I don't see this deadline... I don't see a resolution anything changing before the deadline. But what I'm saying is, it doesn't seem to be a concern for America from a perspective of, we hate you, South Africa, we're going to show you. It seems to be a global policy agenda that America is truckling out.
Here's my problem, right, with the hard, soft question, right? I'm going to answer your side first. Actually, no, let me answer your side first. We're not being too soft because our... imperative has always been, as a republic, you don't get to choose our friends first.
Sure.
And I
our friends
this,
first.
Our friends for us.
Oh, for us, yeah.
And I'm going to cite a visit Nelson Mandela took to the US. Remember when he released, he had all those tours.
With Ted Koppel.
Yeah, all those tours, the US, the UK, everywhere. Everyone wanted a little piece of Nelson Mandela magic.
Sure.
And yes, I know a lot of people are like, sell out. No. Stay with me. The issue here is that there was a time where American journalists had a press briefing with Mandela, and someone asked him, are you going to go to Cuba after America has been so hospitable to you, et cetera, et cetera?
Because Cuba was their enemy.
Yes. And he said, well, I'm going to go to Havana because those guys helped us. And I can't now mise them helping us because... You are upset. South Africa will not have people tell us who their friends should be or should not be.
Sure.
So I think we're not being soft in as far as how we're dealing with America is concerned. What I will say, though, is that how South Africa has tried to deal with it is, okay, we're not the only ones in this mess. Great. We have other partners like Japan, like Saudi Arabia, like the UAE.
India.
India is critical but stable, but we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that one.
India's getting honorable mentions on Truth Social. That's why I said, oh, India.
No, the problem with India is that it's too close to the US. And there's a little bit of mistrust now in BRICS because of how India is approaching the America situation. Because
Modi and Trump are friends.
Allegedly, apparently. So the issue now is that South Africa took the approach of, okay, you've done this. I don't think it's a great decision because there's AGOA coming up and we need to sign off on AGOA to continue this relationship. So when you add this tariff, are you saying to us that we're out of AGOA? One critical question. Second critical question is, if we're going to operate like this, we're not operating in good faith.
Sure.
Right. Which means that you don't need the 290 billion rand worth of products that are coming that direction. Also, the third thing is that Trump's not really being honest about the fact that this tariff also impacts Americans, and American companies want to come to South Africa and pour money into South Africa.
And do business here, etc.
Because it's expensive to manufacture anything in America right now. That's why they went all over the world and created the political economy of American brands. Everything that's an American brand right now, the things we wear, the computers we use.
The phones.
It comes from somewhere.
Sure.
Just not America.
Not just not America.
Exactly. So as much as I wish South Africa would adopt the Lula approach where he was like, Brazil doesn't care whether America lives or dies. Go on. Go on with your bad self. Continue your lives. We don't care. And poor fool, we don't want to be in the same room as that man.
Sure.
South Africa's like, listen, yes, we do get funding from you for things like HIV program, health program, communicable disease ARVs. Programs. Mm. It's not the sum total of our entire budget. But there's good work coming out of it. Let's continue trying to work together. In the same way with trade, with different industries. Automobiles are now suddenly not going to be made in South Africa. That time we've had automobile manufacturers in South Africa since the democratic era. Gqeberha's entire fleet automobile manufacturers may stand empty. At least Volkswagen is with Germany, and we have good ties with Germany. We have good ties with the EU because the EU just signed a brand new deal with us.
Sure.
But Abba Ford.
Ford is also
Ford.
There.
Ford is US. A lot of people are driving Fords in and around this country and making Fords from scratch.
Sure.
You're creating situations whereby other countries can come to us and be like, hey, because I'm Germany and I have Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Benz, all of the top five biggest brands, but also affordable sedans that everyone drives around the world, we can pump money in. So it creates this vacuum now of, okay, there are other markets we can consider. And South Africa has always had options. It's just that I think also how we positioned it made it seem like the US was the only option because the US is the problem, biggest market. Yeah. So that's why I think also the whole we're being sensitive thing doesn't work, because I think we've given the US fair and substantive chances to not only just solve the issue around not having an ambassador, but also solve the issue of whatever misinformation that they're leaking left, right, center, up, down. I get it. Elon Musk was harassed by some Afrikaans white boy, ko Afis. But he must get over it. if he didn't pass the set of regulations that come with ICASA in terms of being able to operate in this country, he must accept it.
Yeah.
Because there's no corruption band or cabal running the ICASA as a brand. And I'm not saying this because I believe in ICASA in any way, shape, or form. But everyone goes through the same issues when it comes to BEE policies. Everyone goes through the same thing. He had to appear. He didn't appear. He had to answer questions. He didn't want to answer questions. Whose problem is that? And as much as you're a great billionaire, you can't dictate what a whole country does or does not do, even though we know you're funding right-wing institutions across the world right now to disrupt whatever you feel unhappy with in the vehicle called democracy. And I think that's what this whole tariff thing is truly about. And it
In other words, there's another agenda. It's not always about what you see at face value. Yes. I also said that,
Always has been.
So I hope I answered the question around we're being too sensitive, we're being too soft, we're being too this. I wish we could go the Lula route, but we also need to remember what our foreign policy is. And our policy is premised around the fact that nobody else is going to tell us who's our friend and who's not our friend.
Yeah, I just think as a citizen, and many citizens feel like sometimes we're not spoken for or protected when the leaders are like very, yes boss, approach, Nazi Stella, a catch. It's like, what about us? We're not going to get anything that you... Oh, twerking for, you know?
Not twerking, please.
That's, I think, I'm just sharing, how many people feel. The sentiment. The sentiment is that, okay, cool. These guys are just negotiating for their own personal benefit. And, fuck us.
Because of the rebranding of things. You know, it always does seem like these ones are looking after their own interests.
And then, I think,
and then when these things do take, unfortunately, the end result of these things, when they don't go our way, the people who suffer the most, it's poor. Not the people who are at the table having the discussion.
Sorry, just just to localize what we're just ending off on now, you know, with the Sufi reshuffling some of his cabinet. Very interesting. Well, not very interesting. I think it sometimes seems like he's acting like he's doing his job, right? Okay, you see.
I want to see how this sentence finishes.
No, it's just
let him land.
No, even in my landing here, I'm just like sometimes I feel like he's vocal about the things that he does, and maybe people question his agenda of like, oh, okay, well, you know, we're celebrating you for fucking breathing air because you're supposed to be doing these things as you know, as your position. But don't you feel like he does his job and excels at it, or no?
As the man at the helm of the biggest economy.
They used to call him Papa Action because he would be at every school whenever there was a racist incident, whenever there was a crisis with with enrolling your children onto a new school for the new school year. He was on the scene everywhere. Right? And for me, his reshuffle, as much as it speaks to the reports and the recommendations he received from the ethics council, it also was brought about by the fact that he almost lost 1.3 billion because that money should have gone back to Treasury. So when there's severe underspending, who's going to have to take responsibility for that? It will definitely not be, well, he's made it the HOD's rolling heads, but he has to answer to why are we not putting that money into projects that work. And not G20, things that will make Gauteng grow,
in the long term,
overcome its municipal service delivery issues. Like, it's one thing to say that we are seeing all of these changes across the different departments, but the fact that there's also vacancies for an extended period of time doesn't help government get its job done. Who signs off on all of these big projects if there's nobody acting or nobody in the department to ensure the smooth running of projects and the delivery of services?
So do you think it was more of a reshuffle to distract us?
Save face.
Yeah, well, to distract from whose fault is it really?
I think more than anything, I would need more time to read through the 49 reports that they've now put up, because there was a wide range. There were wide ranging issues between all of the top departments around issues of corruption, around intimidation and death threats being given to whistleblowers who had come forward. Because we also have an endemic problem of whistleblowers either landing up dead or are being exposed and people are coming after them. As a country, we shouldn't be just reshuffling people because they're not performing. We should be reshuffling people if they're abusing their power to make other people's lives a living hell. We shouldn't be having people dying, public servants dying, trying to do the right things. And I think one of the things that this reshuffle tells me is that there are a lot of people who want to tell the truth about what's going on in government, but cannot.
But not at the cost of their lives.
Not at the cost of their families. Because also we read about people who have died in office and we see the visuals of the family being distraught. We see the funerals, but no one goes after those funerals to see how are those people living? How are those people surviving now that their breadwinner is no more because they were trying to serve the Republic? It also brings into question the code of ethics that gets signed by every public servant in this country. What does it mean if we can't implement consequences? And these consequences mustn't wait for a Panyaza Lesufi or a commission to show up.
But why do they, you know, you've mentioned the term a republic. We are a republic. I feel like people want, you know, like whenever these things arise, there's a form of action that people want to see, and then there's a form of action that we get. You can almost predict the form of action that we're going to get when something happens, right? Mm. Is it because something, you know, like we are a constitutional republic, aren't
we? Yes.
Does that then, is that not a hindrance to us getting an action republic? You know, like it's all well and good to say we are a constitutional republic, but when it comes down to actions being taken, republic, in its due process of these procedures that need to be instituted, it seems to be stifling action being taken, and then we are stuck with useless people who underspend, who are corrupt, who are up to no good for longer.
For longer periods of time.
While stuff is falling apart. Yeah. We now have to put people on leave for 6 months and pay them a full salary when it's like, yo, the salary of, say for example, 300,000 rand a month.
Accumulates.
That's a lot of, that's 1.8 bars that we could have saved because we already know kutama watsepa kona, you know? Banyaza comes in, he's like, how? Underspending in PH's department. What's all this nyaga nyaga? Bafo, ubedile, hamba. Mbize, you understand? Ngimphoshe. Not all this
commission.
Halapaloo. We don't need a halapaloo. You are in charge of this department, PH. I'm your boss. You have underperformed. You have failed to deliver. Goodbye. So that I can quickly institute the replacement. Waras.
Private sector, 172196.
You see? Like, we need to move.
No, I think
now we don't move because we are a constitutional republic.
And I think, sorry. Mm-hmm. That's why, and I think, you know, the country would steer to someone like Mkwanazi. Is like, oh, we have a problem? Going there, cool, sorted. Listen, guys, yesterday, this is the problem that we had, sorted. Bob's uncle.
Couldn't have been simpler.
God will answer to them, you know. Or they'll answer to God, they'll answer to God, you know. But
it's my job to arrange the meeting.
To send them, you know.
Like, get rid of them.
You know, and that's why we're starving for actionable results like that. It's just like, come on, every time it's a commission, it's this, are we going to look into it, and it's more money. Then when you look back, it's like, hey, those guys still haven't closed that case, you know, and money's still being funded.
When you look back, you literally say to yourself, the arms deal is not even resolved.
Yeah.
From apartheid, you know, like, bro, like, as we landed into democracy, there was an arms deal. To this day, Bunabantu arms deal, that matter is not resolved. There were commissions, there were court cases, there were charges, no results. Sure. So, you know, how many times can the same thing happen over and over? Where it starts, the question needs to be raised there. These people are all following the law. I think that's the other thing. That's hence my question, is that they're not doing anything illegal. But the law seems to create a perfect set of circumstances for me to delay action under the guise that...
Yeah.
Constitutional democracy, fam. Either way, it's still on.
All right. Let me answer it in this way, because I always have to face this question whenever I do my work. So, I'm not trying to ABC it or baby anyone. So, please bear with me.
No, baby me. Me, I don't know the context. I really don't.
Not the context in which this was used.
So, my thing. Constitution. In the constitution.
So, we have the constitution. Guiding lights. This is our values. These are our standards. We've come through a lot, but this is what we're trying to build. It's a guideline. Remember? You know how IKEA gives you a guideline on how to build a chair? That is your builder chair. Now, your question relates to what is the legal framework of how these structures that are supposed to hold up the chair keep the chair held up.
When we follow this thing.
Exactly. Now, a lot of people like to conflate guideline of instructions versus the things holding up the chair.
Like Timu, what I ordered versus what I got.
Exactly. But leave Timo out of this, because Timo might come to save us at some point.
Yeah.
Now, the problem with how we look at these sorts of conversations around commissions, whether they work or not, due process and how it delays justice or delays action, is that there are institutions within the legal framework that we don't talk about often, because we also forget where they are placed and what mandate they have. So I'll make an example with the Public Service Commission. They're supposed to look at the infrastructure that is the public service. All the departments, all the spheres of governance, whether it be national...
Is that like Home Affairs, Public Service Departments?
Yes. Health, so that's health, Home Affairs, municipalities, provinces,
police station,
everybody.
Okay.
Depending on where they sit, and sit in the different spheres, national, provincial, local. Municipal, local, or which specific departments they sit in. So that's your Home Affairs, that's your SEPs, that's your
JMPD.
Department of Health.
Mm.
Now, when you have these institutions like your Public Service Commission, right, they issue reports about what are the challenges public service is facing. And I wish they would have a louder voice when it comes to the issues of ethics, when it comes to the issues of what rules these premiers and these MECs and these mayors and these municipal managers have to ensure that if they find wrongdoing, they work faster. Because without those institutions saying to people, hey, you need to get rid of this person fast, otherwise it's 4:10, we don't have another option but to take these people to court. And I know people don't have a lot of trust with the judiciary or with the court system at the moment and their ability to move through events quickly.
Mkwanazi said.
I know. We'll get there. Yeah, Mkwanazi, man.
Mdidiel.
What? Defense force, yake inkulu.
The one.
Because the judiciary doesn't move quickly, right? It will move in its pace because it also has to go through evidence before the time of the event to establish what is the justifiable or the equal, like Emmanuel Kant says, the equal and direct punishment or consequence to the crime committed.
Mm.
One of the things we also need to remember is that without these institutions, we don't know the extent to which this thing is happening, right? And we have to find a balance as a country in how do we put pressure on institutions like Public Service Commission to say, hey, this ethics thing, why are these people delaying their actions within government to get the wrong people out and to have them be able to start either paying back the money or seeing who is part of this cabal?
Mm.
You think about simple things like when you go to the traffic department or when you go to Home Affairs and there's corruption in that branch, where as a people do we go to report these things?
Mm.
And why are those things never adhered to? That's for me is where I think we as a people need to start asking questions. Because for as long as we don't ask these questions about these institutions that are not necessarily institutions that are going to be the final arbiters of ensuring that these ethical processes continue, are followed and are completed, you're always going to be asking yourself, why does it take 7 years for a report about the Zondo State Capture Commission
Chief,
to take place?
You.
Why did we spend so much money on these things? As another thing we need to take into account, right, is that within government itself, it's very difficult to keep up with who is doing the tendering, how. And a lot of people have called for the tender system to be abolished because that's where most of the corruption takes place. But it becomes hard now to assess people's performance if there aren't people within the government to say, hey, what do you do here? The issue of ghost workers.
Mm.
We've never seen you come in here before, but you get a salary.
Mm. The issue, that Free State
But there, one. There are no services.
Mm.
So do you see how in these small ways, without an institution to hold public servants accountable, we are stuck? And the problem is that you have the unions who obviously want to make sure that their workers continue to work.
Mm.
But how much can we extend our trust to them when it comes to issues of ethics? How much can we trust the ability of these political heads, which are your MECs sometimes, which are your premiers sometimes, to hold accountable their own. Sure. I know Banyaza Lusufi means well by wanting to make it seem like this reshuffle is addressing underperformance, but at the same time, are we really getting anywhere?
You know what my challenge is? You spoke of, obviously, you know, how IKEA says build a chair, mm-hmm. you know, and the framework that we reference, which is the legal, you know.
Yeah.
My challenge is there's advancement of issues, but we're using a beta version, or not even a beta version, a version 0.01.
DOS.
You know?
DOS.
We're using a DOS version of very complicated version, of very complex issues that require, I think, advancement of how we
who we are as a country then is not who we are as a country now.
Yes. Okay. You know? And I think that's one of the problems where, because as you were talking, I'm just like, sure, we would need more, like, to solve the issue of backlogs in many departments, whether it's at, you know, court, whatever it is, we would need more capacity, you know, when it comes to solving those things or alleviating the pressure.
Mm.
And, you know, that further then, you know, adds to jobs. We're employing more lawyers. We're employing more investigators. We're employing more. Why is that not, why aren't the departments in government who have that responsibility, why aren't they, you know, focusing on that to say, okay, cool, to solve the bottleneck issue in people getting court cases, we need more, whatever it is, to alleviate that pressure. Okay, how do we get to it?
Since we're underspending our budgets anyway.
Agenda 2030 is to get more of this. Do you get what I'm saying? In those departments. But what you're speaking of probably applies to the same issue that was there 10 years ago. Yeah, that's
my. Can I say on that point, right? Because I took part in a panel discussion.
Of course, another panel discussion.
Yes, crime crisis in SA.
Panel discussion.
There's something, Canton, we was one of the panelists, raised in terms of, to speak to PH's point, tech solutions within a department like SEPS.
Yeah.
There's technology available to streamline the way something happens to me. I go to the police station, charge office, I see Officer Matubela, and I say, hey, they robbed me. Bang, Jonjili cell phone. And they also logged into my phone and they went into my apps and sent my money out. I'm narrating this to this guy who's been there the whole day. Yes, he has a matric. Because he didn't have another option for work. He writes my statement down. We catch the criminals. At that point, when we're going through my written statement that my officer Matubela wrote, there's inaccuracies, it's poorly written. I don't even remember the day because it's a year later that these people are caught. And there's no like digital backup where perhaps I could even, we have the technology now where I could literally narrate it and ChatGPT would write it verbatim. Okay, that's one. Two, Officer Matubela hears from the person that I'm charging, and that person pays him 5,000, keeper is in the docket. Because it's a physical hard copy in a brown folder that sits in a pile of brown folders. It's easy for this guy to make 5,000 to make my charges go away. By the time the court appearance comes again 3 months later, there's things missing from the docket. We can't find the IO. The IO is now in Polokwane because he's been reassigned. My case has been moved to the next person. And I spent 5 years trying to charge this man, whoever it was, with what he did to me. If there was this technology incorporated into the SAP system, what I report on the day of the incident will exist there in the cloud. No one can tamper with it. No one can take a bribe to delete it. It's a more efficient system. But I said this to him at the time, and I'll say it again. The system is almost designed in such a way that,
to benefit,
because it can be manipulated, there's too many holes in it where I can make money. I'm not going to be an advocate for change when I'm making too much money with it being broken the way it is. Andre de Reiter said it's about Eskom. And Mkwanazi raised it in his famous, now famous media briefing, is that because the system is the way it is, a big boss can come in and say, Ewen, awu yilap. Another one can make a call and say, send other cops to stop those cops. Do you understand this? Like, We didn't even need to send cops on that day that the arrest was taking place. They could have deployed drones. You know, there's drones that can go and surveil. Mm. Again, it goes to the cloud. I don't rely on statements like mang mang. Mm. I can say, ah, chief, now we are available. What were you doing there? So Mufonelo ubani. I can truncate. I mean, 10 years ago when the Guptas were on trial, we knew where Ntlantlanene was. Was it not Ntlantlanene? Brian Molef.
Yeah, Brian.
We knew Brian was there because we tracked his cell phone. Mm. 10 years ago. But 10 years later, we are unable to ascertain who sent the WhatsApp to say, you understand, we need a 6-month commission to establish where the WhatsApp came from. Come on now. So technology seems to be their enemy because it's going to remove these opportunities for nyaga nyaga.
I hear you, but you guys are forgetting the key aspect of how things work in this country.
Tendering.
Money.
Tendering.
We need money. We need money. Here's the problem. So...
resources are money.
Ah, the money's there, friend.
No. Can I clarify why I said money?
You said I'm a billionaire. Money's there. Do they want to spend it on these things?
If I were to go through all of the provinces...
Let's let her land.
If I had to go through all the provinces to send back money to National Treasury, this is money unspent from all of their departments.
Billions.
The question... it's billions, yes. The question would become, what does National Treasury do with that extra money?
Mm.
Are we servicing the debts? Why are we not debt-free at this point? Is another question we have to ask ourselves in as far as the Treasury is concerned. And what deals, what loans do we keep signing for?
Bro, that's another thing.
To answer, to tend to your question, the issue around how we capacitate people, this is human capital, this is human development.
Sure.
Another institution that hardly gets any airtime. They do, but in a very we're making sure our public servants are educated. National School of Governance. National School of Governance is not just a place where you get to study further whilst you're in the public service. They should be running quite a number of workshops, ethics workshops, across the country, across the different spheres of government, to ensure not just the gendering element gets closed down, but we deal with this problem of why is it so easy for public servants to forget not just the ethics code that they signed along with their contract because they were happy to get jobs, but also the service delivery aspect of this conversation, right? To get back to your question around the issue of human capacity, they also have a role to play to ensure the new cohort of nurses, doctors, teachers, SEPs people, everybody that's supposed to be in the client-facing aspect of governance, in the everyday interactions between the citizen and the government, they are adequately prepared for that mission. And that, unfortunately, requires money, a lot of money.
You mean the person at the desk at Home Affairs?
Not just Home Affairs, not just their salary. Oh, yeah. stay with me.
Mm.
It's also this issue of ensuring that we have, to the question of the issue on digitalization, we also have the money to ensure that we can protect our systems. There have been several departments in the past 5 years that have been hacked in one way or another.
Sure.
And the fact that we can't even solve that issue means that the body cams that Umpanyazo was talking about last year in his SOPA, the issue around putting in drones and capacitating the police to be able to do the investigative work, and even the healthcare system is crying out to have digital files so that every single patient, so that every single patient can be able to access health services, but can also have doctors and nurses who are prepared to take them on because they may have moved to a different province, but they need chronic medication. Is that province ready and capacitated to be able to onboard him as part of service delivery?
Can that province simply?
So the thing is that we need money not just to take on new people, but also to take on the advancement of technology in order for it to work with us when we're not physically in our offices, when we're not physically available 24/7.
Yeah, but it makes it seem as if we can't start. Let's start. Doesn't have to be this. Not that it doesn't have to be this grand plan, but you gradually phase out things, or you have a hybrid approach. I'm just making an example where it now just seems like, oh yeah, we need my coroner, or there's departments, or there's people where we can go and find that money. You're hearing of us returning billions. It's like, well, those billions could have started, you know, the programs to educate certain people so that in the next 2 years, these educated people, that, you know, this can first batch, can enter, you know, and then year by year, we're advancing in this department, in these departments, or in the advancement of the technology. But right now, it just seems like it's asnamal.
I understand that, and it's a very irritating response. But the thing is that South Africa is also, like, National Treasury has also lent itself into this narrative.
Yeah.
Because, one, a lot of the public spending departments, doesn't matter whether it's health, whether it's the police, whether it's home affairs, whether it's education, all have faced, even social development, have all faced spending cuts over the past 5 years consistently, whether it be in the midterm, whether it be at budget speech in February.
At every juncture.
So I understand what you're saying, but if Enoch Godongwana and the team at National Treasury would actually take us into their confidence and say to us, this is what we do with the money that doesn't get spent.
Sure.
One. Or two, here are the options as to how we're going to deal with this problem.
Sure.
And it's not like we're sitting in an environment where we can't be solution-driven, or they're not a set of economists that are constantly writing to Treasury, or constantly writing to the presidency saying, guys, we need to look at another way to build this economy.
Sure.
There has to be another way for us to find money. There's a guy, Chris Pappas. He's the mayor of Umgeni local.
Umgeni, yeah. We interviewed him.
Yeah.
He spoke, he wrote a really nice article in the Daily Maverick recently about the issue of how service delivery can be a revenue stream that drives development. And he also spoke about how even the way in which we collect revenue for service delivery has gotten us to a point where now all of a sudden a municipality owes millions to Eskom.
Eskom, yeah.
Mm.
That time, its residents are paying.
To and the municipality.
And they're paying with the tariff increases that are taking place each year.
With the electricity of 30%. And can I say something to that point? Because someone mentioned this to me the other day, and I'd never thought of it, but now I see, right? Mm. We do some work in the inner city.
Mm.
And, you know, you've got the issue of derelict buildings and
building buildings.
Hijackings, etc. And what you're saying, Chris Pappas raised, I think this guy was trying to point out, he was saying that the city is looking for means of generating revenue, right? They've got all these buildings under their control, which at the moment are
chaos.
Shitholes, you know, excuse my language, but they are gag. Instead of saying, let's take this budget of, say, 5 million rand, fix this building, okay? Let low, because it's low-cost housing. You know, you're looking at a rental of between 2 and 5,000 rand maximum monthly, depending on the size of the unit. Because there are plenty of working people, people who earn money, that are currently just living in the building, right? There's no running water, or services have been cut from this building. Mm. And now you're in this, like, sort of like...
country.
Yeah, well, the city's on some... Yeah, well, the owner must pay the outstanding rates, for example.
Mm.
And the owner is on some... My building has been hijacked, I'm not paying shit. If the city was to supply the support, for example, that the owner needed to get the building back under control, budgets had to be allocated to say, let's fix this building. All of a sudden, you've turned it into an asset that was earning no money to earning revenue from water, revenue from electricity, and revenue from, what is it, rates and taxes, times 200 or something is the number of buildings that are in this situation.
Yeah.
So you're not delivering the service in that people are not getting low-cost housing, affordable housing, safe housing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the housing is not servicing the city in the form of, if people are actually living there and this building is running smoothly, you are making money as the city instead of sitting with a 12-story monstrosity in the middle of town.
Nobody wins.
Yes, that might catch a light, and then 80 people die. Because, you know, the end result of it is these buildings generally either burn down or crimes happen in the buildings. Mm. And there just doesn't seem to be that much effort to make that dream a reality. And then they complain about, ish, we are not collecting enough money from the residents. Mm. But as you said, the residents are paying. You are then in turn not paying Eskom. You know, and then you expect Eskom to jump every time the city says, yo, we've got this issue. Eskom is on some, you guys owe us 16 billion.
We have our own problems.
Yes, wait for us, you know.
I hear you. And I mean, I think a lot of, and I know people are going to hate me for saying this, but a lot of this is also politicized rhetoric around foreign nationals, who lives in the building. We mustn't help people who are foreign nationals and who are illegal. What I will say is this. The issue around the city and the city's in and out approach, because remember, the city's gone through maybe 6 or 7 mayors in the last decade.
Mm. Last couple
at
weeks.
Least two of them died in the seat. The issue now, we need to have someone who's decisive enough to say, well, we need to create a solution around this issue and be able to start not either moving people out. Because remember in the Herman Mashaba era, I think 2016, 2017, I may be wrong. Someone will tell me in the comments.
He was adamant,
not just adamant about taking people out. He actually emptied those buildings. Mm. People's things were sitting on Rahima Musa Road, the road just before Brie. Literally, there's a whole road that was closed. And people's belongings were just sitting there on street level. You saw people's beds. There are three bedroom suites. Their bags.
We're in the era of Ellery.
Look, I'm a 90s kid. I'll definitely own up to that.
Get the six-piece kitchen scheme.
Joshua Doe was the death of us.
It's easier to live better.
Oh, wait. Not you remembering the jingle. No way.
Oh, my God.
Get this six-piece kitchen scheme.
Sorry.
So silly.
Vele, meneba kipa my kitchen scheme. But Herman Mashab, it worked. He got the buildings back.
Yeah, but the thing is that ever since he took all of those buildings and cleaned them out, the next mayor...
And he had to deal with the backlash. Remember, that didn't go down well.
A lot of people were not happy.
Xenophobic. Yeah. And. What's your thought on that? Like, you know, recently, foreign nationals have been banned. People are blocking them from entering public health facilities, Operation Dudula, etc. Yeah. At the point at which, you know, I like that we've had a discussion about cool at the political level decisions, etc. When the people are hurtful, they start doing shit like this. They start calling people cockroaches and they start preventing them from getting medical care.
Someone was ruled guilty of defamation, gave for the cockroach comment.
I saw the cockroach comment.
So, yeah, people need to apologize. And it was likened to
the Rwandan situation. They were saying that, like, in Rwanda, when the Tutsis and the Hutus were at it, like, started fighting, where that thing started.
The genocide.
But where it started was public radio. Was putting out messages like, yo, Tutsis are cockroaches and they are vermin. It started, you know, galvanizing people.
Yeah.
And when you get people, like, to use the inner city as an example, very tense there.
You can go
to the inner city and you can go about your business and you can get cool stuff at Small Street Mall. And if you can avoid getting mugged,
cool stuff.
You'll find that 90% of the people there just go about their daily business and want to get stuff done.
Mm.
But there's this tension. Where more and more of the ownership of what's going on there is in the hands of foreign nationals. It's hard to find shops that are still locally owned.
Especially after the gas explosion, which is another issue that Dada Morero must go and answer.
That's already been half paid for, but nothing has happened.
No, Sakina Kamwendo did a crossing, I think, at the year mark of the year commemoration since the explosion. Not a whole nothing has been done.
Sounds like South Africa.
We
to
had
me.
Kenny Kunene here. We can't even follow up with him. He's since been removed.
Well, yeah, awkward. But yeah, I think
everyone's getting investigated today. We can't go to people who don't want to talk
because there's a commission.
Yeah.
On top of them, busy commission, yeah. Commission.
Why were you at the guy's house? Yes, the Kenneth never wanted to leave the life. That's all. That entire situation convinced me.
This is why I stayed home.
You know. Listen, I've been at some.
To leave the life.
I've been at some houses where I swear, houses. If they swooped in, I would have been in a problem.
Yeah,
but I wasn't there for
anything. You were
blooming. Yeah.
You're just like it's another Saturday afternoon.
I don't know.
Him and I have been at houses. This guy was at the ultimate house.
Oh, you were going there. You go to Diddy's house once. Now you must answer. Why were you thank you so much for your time. I think we could go on and on, and I think we're gonna need we need her back. There's a lot of problems in this country, and we need to talk about the effects of what
Run for office. We need more
and
people.
Yeah, maybe
like
run for office.
No, I can't. I'm going to do what Naledi Pando did at the lecture. At a lecture once, someone asked her that question. I have no desire to run for presidency.
Mm.
So the record must show I have no desire. Please, I don't want to die early. I have a family.
Yay. Oh, come here. Go and advise this. Sit on an advisory board or something. Because we need more people who are technologically, not in technology, just advanced here, and not people who can't even fucking open WhatsApp. And
chief.
And you sit in
people who need
like,
a commission of inquiry into WhatsApp.
No, we get told, you know, we are too radical for the political heads.
No, man.
We're too radical.
The country needs, like, change. It's just, the more we go on like this, the more...
Yeah. On the Conor McGregor example, what do you think PH's chances would be?
Look! It wouldn't be as bad as he thinks, but he needs to run for sports, arts, and culture.
Yeah,
he can't go anywhere else.
Yeah, I can go.
Don't
there.
Do what Gayton and Kenny did.
Yeah.
Don't.
No. I won't be caught at people's houses. I'll stay on the
straight and narrow, people. It's that simple.
I qualify for that department, chief. Who's I'm a sportsman.
I'm a sportsman.
I'm an artist, chief.
No, chief. Gayton is there, my man.
No, I'm just saying after.
We are there.
After I'm Gayton. Next.
You know, when they reshuffle, I'm there.
You inside.
Yeah, I must go. But now I must run for, I must go with the political party.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how we wrap the show. Thank you so much for your time. We could go on, and I think we definitely need you back.
Thanks for educating us. I still don't believe in this constitution thing. I don't get it. But do you have Mkwanazi's number for me?
No.
Yeah, we need it.
I would like to state for the record that I have no affiliation to any of the politicians mentioned here today.
Sure. Got you.
Where can
people tune in and obviously just get more of your commenting? Yeah.
So I haven't commented on things for a long time. Okay. So you're like my first little interview in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
People can follow me on X at Kanye Bonani, and that's about it.
Okay. All right, cool. Well, that's how we end this party, yeah?
Yes, that's how we end this party, sir. We're back again next week, same time, same place. You know the story. Like, subscribe, follow.
Comment.
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 Yes, comment. Till next week, take it easy. If it's easy,
take it home.
We're
out of here. Bye.